Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, this is Robert Crowther for the Center for Science and Culture and ID the Future. Today, I'm privileged to bring you an interview between radio host Kirby Anderson and New York Times bestselling author Stephen Meyer, the director of Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Stephen joined Kirby on Point of View Radio to talk about an exciting conference that is just around the corner, the Dallas Science and Faith Conference 2019. It's this Friday evening and all day Saturday at Park City's Baptist Church in Dallas. To register and learn more, go to discovery.org and click on events. Now, on to the show.
Across America, live, this is Point of View. And now, Kirby Anderson.
This hour, I want to spend some time talking about a conference that is taking place in the Dallas area, the Dallas Conference on Science and Faith. One of the speakers is now joining me for the hour, so this is an opportunity for you to learn more about intelligent design, how to think about science from a Christian point of view, and of course, also, if I hope that you will join the conference, or if not, get some of the material and some of even the other resources that are available to it. Dr. Stephen Meyer has been on the program with us many times before. Holds a PhD in the philosophy of science from the University of Cambridge, a former geophysicist and college professor. Of course, he now directs the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. You know that we have talked with him about all of his books, whether it's The Signature in the Cell, DNA and the Evidence for Intelligent Design, or The Case for Intelligent Design, or perhaps one of the more recent ones, Darwin's Doubt, The Explosive Origin of Animal Life. And so just some great resources that we'll be talking about today here on Point of View. So Dr. Stephen Meyer, welcome back to Point of View.
Great to be with you, Kirby. Thanks for having me on.
Let's, if we can, talk a little bit about the conference and then get into the broader issue of intelligent design. And I was just thinking about this conference. I remember a conference years ago done by one of the co-founders of Probe Ministries, John Buell, and one of my original individuals that was with me at Probe, who then later was with the other ministry that was the Foundation for Thought and Ethics, which is now associated with Discovery Institute, Charles Thaxton. And if I remember right, I think you went to one of those conferences. They had it at SMU, and they really kind of had a point counterpoint between some of these scientists. And it does seem to me that this is another opportunity to hear some very outstanding individuals give you a perspective about intelligent design that you just, quite frankly, are not going to get from the mainstream media.
Well, absolutely. And there, you're right. There's been a history of seminal conferences and events in Dallas. One that really changed the direction of my life was in way back in 1985 when I was working as a geophysicist for one of the oil companies in town. And mm-hmm. It was a conference on cosmology. It was on the origin of the universe, the origin of life, and the origin and nature of human consciousness. And it featured speakers from both an atheistic materialist point of view on the one hand, and from a theistic or Christian point of view on the other. And it was a fascinating exchange on those kind of fundamental worldview-shaping issues. And then I believe it was 92, there was a really important event at SMU, and I was just out of grad school at that point and ended up going counterpoint with Michael Ruse, a fairly famous philosopher of biology, and a number of the leading now leading proponents of intelligent design actually met at that conference. It was the first time I met Michael Behe or William Dembski. And so Dallas has kind of been an interesting hub for these ideas way back to the beginning, starting with Charles Thaxton and his work with you guys and then with the Foundation for Thought and Ethics both. So, yeah, it's been so it's really exciting to have another such event this year, and it will be at it's going to be held at the Park City's Baptist Church, and we already have over 700 people pre-registered, and it will feature the very famous organic chemist from Rice University, Jim Tour, my colleague from Discovery, Jay Richards, who's written with Guillermo Gonzalez the book Privileged Planet, which is a fascinating book about the the special features of our planetary system and Earth in particular that make it not only suitable for life, but make it possible for human beings to discover the wonders of the cosmos. And then we'll also have with us Eric Metaxas, who's always good value. He's going to open the conference with one of his Socrates in the City style interviews with me, and we've done a couple of these before. One of them, I think, is up online, and you can get a sense of what Eric's about. He's a terrifically deep thinking Christian intellectual, but also extremely funny. And so I think the conference should be a lot of fun as well as very informative.
Yeah, I think Eric Metaxas is going to be the stand-up comedian for the group, and he certainly does a great job. And as a matter of fact, almost all those individuals you just mentioned have been interviewed many times here on Point of View. Jay Richards on, not only to talk about intelligent design, but now he spent a lot of time in the area of economics. Of course, we've had you on many times, and Eric, of course. Jim Torr is somebody I've known for years and have never been able to get him on the program, but need to, because we just think very highly of the work that he does, first, just as an outstanding Christian at Rice University. Second of all, the way he's starting to call out some of the people the way you have of saying, you know, you really have just got to stop teaching about this idea of prebiotic evolution, saying that we can explain the origin of life. You have no evidence for this. As a matter of fact, we have very good contrary evidence to some of the things you're saying. So he brings a new voice to a conversation that I am so glad that you're bringing him to, because he is somebody that we've had such high respect for, and I'm glad that he'll be at the conference as well with you.
Yeah, it's a very authoritative voice as well that he brings to this subject of prebiotic evolution or the origin of life. He's one of the two or three leading organic chemists in the world. He's got over 600 peer-reviewed publications, 150 patents or more. I mean, he's just an unbelievable powerhouse. And a few years ago, he took on this question of the chemical evolutionary origin of life, and he said, essentially, and he's giving a full talk on this, and he's a tremendous speaker, but he points out that at every step in the way in these experiments that allegedly simulate the origin of life via undirected chemical processes, that the intelligent chemist is guiding the process. They choose products that have been already manufactured by other intelligent chemists. They follow very specific recipes. They remove interfering byproducts in the chemical reactions to allow them to move forward. And they still don't get very far in the direction of life. But to the extent they succeed at all, it's only with the help of intelligent intervention. And that certainly doesn't illustrate the power of undirected chemical processes. So he's really been kind of, holding people to account to not exaggerate the claims of these scientific theories in service of undirected evolution.
Well, again, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that are in your book, Signature in the Cell, Darwin's Doubt, and certainly we'll get into that, especially when we talk about Signature in the Cell, DNA and the evidence for intelligent design. If there's one thing we recognize is that any kind of code, and I have over the years had to write computer code. Matter of fact, I put myself through graduate school writing computer code, recognize it doesn't happen by chance. As a matter of fact, one of the great frustrations for some of us that write computer code is one mistake in the wrong place and nothing works, which is a very good analogy to what we have in terms of DNA. So we want to talk about that for just a few minutes. And then the whole issue of Darwin's Doubt, which kind of gets back to some of the conversation with James Tour, you know, the Cambrian explosion in life, the origin of life, and those kinds of things. So these are some topics you can address. And I might just mention that if you also would like to see more of Steve Meyer, when I teach on the creation-evolution controversy oftentimes in Bible schools, I will find myself quoting him or showing clips of him from Icons of Evolution, Mystery of Life, Darwin's Dilemma, many of the illustrious media. So those videos are available. A lot of them are available on YouTube as well. So they're just a great way in which you can educate yourself or even educate your Sunday school class about some of these issues. So when we come back, class in session, and we'll have a chance to hear from Dr. Stephen Meyer. Let's take a break. We'll be back with more right after this. Stephen Meyer with us, and he is one of the speakers, along with Dr. Jay Richards, who's been on the program with us, Eric Metaxas, who's been on many times with us, as well as Dr. James Tour, professor of chemistry at Rice University, will be part of the Dallas Conference, which will be taking place Friday evening, January 18th, and Saturday, January 19th, and we'll give you some more information about that. We have a link to that on the website, or you can simply go to the Dallas Conference on Science and Faith, or you can certainly go to discovery.org. And for people that would like to help promote that, let me also mention we have the video there. It's about a minute long, and it is really well done, so you can take that video, watch it, and then take a moment to maybe pass it on to others, raising questions about whether science and religion are in conflict, or questions about whether or not we have evidence for intelligence, and whether the universe is a result of raw chance or randomness and those kinds of things. So all of it is available at our website, pointofview.net. And so again, let me encourage you to do what you can to register for the conference, or maybe to educate some others and encourage them to attend as well. I thought, Stephen Meyer, for just a minute, we'd revisit a topic that is important, and that is in your signature in the cell in particular. We recognize and have for years said that, randomness does not give to order and information. But you now have a lot more information about that, because we recognize that, let's just use a computer code for just a minute, the bits and bytes have to be in the right order with the right specificity, or you don't get any computer program working. Well, that's almost child's play compared to the incredible amount of information that is packed into the human cell. Tell us more.
Yeah, absolutely. Our local hero up here in Redmond, Washington, Bill Gates, says that DNA is like a computer program, only much more complex than any we've ever devised or created. And that was really the big discovery of what's now called the molecular biological revolution in the 1950s and 60s. It started with Watson and Crick when they elucidated the structure of the DNA molecule. And then a few years after that initial publication in 1953 by Watson and Crick, Crick himself came out with another idea he called the sequence hypothesis, in which he posited that the individual subunits of the DNA molecule that run along the inside of that famed double helix, and these subunits are called nucleotide bases, he postulated that these are functioning just like alphabetic characters in a written language, or the zeros and ones in software code. And in fact, after about 5 to 7 years, his hypothesis was confirmed, and since the mid-60s, we've recognized that DNA is essentially a molecule that contains information in a digital or alphabetic form that encodes for the building of the proteins and protein machines that cells need to stay alive. So a very tight analogy would be to what's called CAD/CAM, computer-assisted design and engineering, which we use in manufacturing in lots of different industries. Up here at the Boeing plant, for example, an engineer will sit at a console, write some code, it will go down a wire, it will be translated into another form of code that can be read by a machine, manufacturing apparatus, and then that machine will place, for example, rivets on an airplane in exact specifications on the wing, in accord with the specifications of the original engineer. So we have digital code directing the construction of a mechanical system. And that's what's going on inside cells. You have this beautiful code in the DNA. It's translated into the RNA code language. And then that RNA information is used to transcribe and to build the proteins and nanomachinery made of proteins that keep cells alive. It's an absolutely fascinating process. Exquisite form of informational complexity at the foundation of life. So in the 19th century, scientists thought that living cells were simple homogeneous globules of plasm. That's a quote from Thomas Henry Huxley, one of Darwin's contemporaries. Yes. And we now know instead that we have an exquisite form of nanotechnology that is informationally based right at the foundation of life. Every living cell, even in the simplest organisms, has this exquisite information processing system at work, and we all depend on it. And it, by Bill Gates' observation, suggests most naturally a master programmer, because we know that information arises from an intelligent source. That's what we know from our uniform and repeated experience, the foundation of all scientific reasoning.
You know, and one of the things you just said in passing is from Michael Behe, because he talks about Darwin's black box. His most recent book, which you have on the website there, is Darwin Devolves. But, you know, the idea of the black box is that back in the 19th century, and let's give Charles Darwin his due, you know, all they had back then was a light microscope. And anybody that's ever had a high school biology class, and you look down there, you see a paramecium or an amoeba, it looks like a bag of goo, you know, it's called protoplasm. And
right,
so in some
right.
respects, it looked pretty simple. Now, with electron microscopes, we can open up that black box and recognize that the cell, just the simplest living cell, is much more complex than Darwin would have ever imagined. And so as you have people now saying, well, you should actually, now that we know more about science, believe in evolution. It seems just the opposite. Now, the more we know about science, the more we recognize the incredible challenges to evolution. True?
Absolutely. And beyond just the challenge to undirected processes of evolution as the explanation for this type of integrated and informational complexity, instead what we are finding are hallmarks of design. Things that we know from our uniform and repeated experience are always produced by intelligent agents. And the first and best example of that is precisely the digital code stored in the DNA molecule. And that's what my book, Signature in the Cell, was mainly about. But Behe has also, I think, made a compelling case for the integrated or irreducible complexity of these nanomachines we're finding inside living cells on a tiny, tiny miniaturized scale. Rotary engines, lighting mm-hmm. clamps, little turbines,
right.
exquisite forms of systems that look obviously engineered. In fact, I remember, you know, when I went off to grad school, my dad was an engineer his whole career, and I left a really good job in his opinion. Geophysics, that made sense to him. But then I was going to do the philosophy of science. He couldn't understand what on earth that was. When I got back from grad school, we were having a talk, and he had been in the hospital for a while, laid up from a skiing injury, and I showed him some of the still images that we had produced, the animator had produced of these little miniature machines that Behe's book was about. And he was had been a mechanical engineer his whole life, and when he saw them, he said, "Oh," he says, "I get it."
Yeah.
He's been a big proponent of intelligent design ever since. So,
yeah, a stator, a rotor, and all those kinds of things that
absolutely.
Look just like an engineering. Just before we take a break, there's something that's been kind of a breakthrough more recently that kind of ties this book into the other book, Darwin's Doubt, and that is we're starting to now find out how many changes at the molecular level would have to take place for you to even get a new species or to get this Cambrian explosion of life. And some of that's just come down in the last couple of years, in which we're recognizing that if indeed you believe in evolution, there's just not enough time and not enough molecular change necessary to give us the diversity of life that we have on the planet.
Yeah, absolutely. The information problem isn't just about the origin of the first cell. Anytime you build anything new in life, you have to provide, or the evolutionary process would presumably have to provide, lots of new information. This is one of the big insights. It takes new information to build new form. And that the informational requirements can now be quantified. In fact, you can use Darwinian what are called population genetic models to do that quantification. And it turns out that the Darwinian mathematical formalism that's part of the what's called modern neo-Darwinian synthesis, the math of neo-Darwinism itself shows that there isn't enough time to accomplish the transitions when we find these major new forms of life arising in the fossil records. So we actually have a mathematical biologist from the University of Stockholm working with a leading paleontologist who was until recently at the Stuttgart Museum of Natural History in Germany, and we are mathematizing the fossil record to quantify how much evolutionary change can take place, and also showing that with the major transitions, you simply don't have enough time to generate the amount of changes that would be necessary to build those new forms of animal life. So not enough time to generate the information necessary to build the fundamentally new forms that arise in the history of life as we see them documented in the fossil record.
Stephen Myers, always fun to have you on the program. So thank you for joining us today here on Point of View.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on and giving the conference a push. It's going to be really exciting.
Looking forward to it.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.